Hi, Royals fans. This is JJ Piccolo. If you suffer a sprain, strain, or fracture, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care at 435 and Nall in Overland Park. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Thursday, May 28, 2020. Now let's talk to our baseball insider from ESPN, Mr. Buster Olney. Good morning, Buster. How are you?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, I almost dread this conversation today because I got to sit here and explain the inexplicable. Not because of you guys. I love talking to you guys. But like trying to find logic and trying to find some foundation in what's going on in baseball. Good luck.
Well, you said it. Let's go. Explain everything to us, Buster.
Oh, my goodness. Have you ever, you know, and I mean, I was trying to think of comparisons. You know, you go to a funeral, you go into memorial service, and there are people arguing in the back too loudly. That's the way it kind of feels right now. Like, that baseball's embarrassing itself. And look, you know, each side has its perspective, but what I've been doing recently is that when I see a tweet that comes out from somebody, one of the players, or some piece of information comes out on Twitter, just go look at the mentions from average fans or followers that are you know, respond to it, and it's overwhelming. Like, what are you guys doing? We don't want to hear it. Why are you arguing about money out in public? You know, they quote the number of people who've lost their jobs. They quote the number of people who've lost their lives. But it persists, and I can't tell you, you know, if it's going to end anytime soon.
Okay, Buster, let me play a little devil's advocate here then, because we've all been on the same, I think, page here that baseball is really doing some damage to itself long term with this. But on the flip side, I'm looking at all these other leagues who are maintaining the appearance of labor peace, but we've heard some NBA players complain. I've heard some Major League Soccer players complain a little bit. They just haven't done it quite as publicly as baseball. And baseball has some issues to sort out. I've heard from a lot of these players, they don't feel like this whole situation in any of these sports is necessarily the most responsible thing to be doing by going out and rushing a plan to go play games when we don't necessarily have this whole situation under control in this country or in the world. Maybe this, would this not be a good time for baseball? If they got this deep rooted of issues, they've already lost a huge percentage of the season. Would it make sense to just hash this out now, as ugly as it's going to get, and do it now instead of agreeing to something hastily and then having a collective bargaining agreement negotiations that get really ugly the next year?
I appreciate the fact that you, like me, like everybody, trying to find some points of logic and you know, how this could work and how this could be productive. But no matter what scenario you play out, this ugliness is going to go on for a long time. And I mean beyond, I think, the current situation, because as we've talked about, you know, the collective bargaining agreement between the players in Major League Baseball runs out in December 2021, and I don't think there's any doubt that that is having an effect on what's going on here. This is like the prelim fight to the big fight that's coming. And if these two sides can't get a deal and all this argument goes on and they wind up canceling the season, or, you know, one side walks out of here feeling really hurt, you just wait till next year. So they can hash things out and they can try to work through things here, but I don't think that the arguments are going to dissipate at all. In fact, I think they're going to get a lot worse. I thought the other day, you know, when the owners, there was a hope among the moderates in the Players Association that the owners' offer the other day that they were going to put forward was going to be something that the players could build on, that there would be some negotiating points. But when the cuts proposed to the players were so draconian, I had moderate agents say, look, this drives everybody closer to the Scott Boras camp and closer to the edge of saying we're not negotiating. And that's certainly what happened last night, you know, with that tweet from Max Scherzer saying, you know, we're done talking about any sort of financial change with the owners. And they are just so far apart that you're beginning to wonder if on the ownership side they might be looking for such big picture changes that this is more about 2021 than about really trying to do what they can to keep baseball in 2020.
I think that you've been the most realistic in talking about baseball's return and keeping our expectations reasonable. So based on everything that we've heard over the past week and new information and the continued bickering, I mean, what's your... You know, Jesse Rogers said he still expects July 4th to be the return date. How are you feeling now as far as your expectations of baseball's return and when it might happen?
I got to tell you, I mean, there's so many people in the game who say privately, well, they're going to work it out, right? I mean, they can't not work it out. And they, you know, assume that, you know, all of this is all the puffery, the bluster before they get a deal done. Because to not do it would be unthinkable. Because not only would there not be baseball for about 18 months, but they also would absolutely turn into bedrock the narrative, which is more complicated, you know, in reality than what the narrative is. But they would absolutely turn into bedrock the narrative that millionaires and billionaires in baseball couldn't work out, didn't come back and play because they couldn't work out the difference in money. And that would be so destructive for the sport going forward. And so you assume that the rational people on both sides at some point would step in and say, no, we got to make this happen. But that all said, I would have assumed that there would be rational people on both sides who would say, we can't have this public fight. This is so bad for all of us that you know our arguments over dollars would spill out in this way, and yet here we are. I would not have guessed that you know a negotiation from the end of March about you know what would come in terms of baseball salaries you know would 2 months later still be in dispute. Like if I'm lawyers or club executives on either side or players on either side, I'm asking the lawyers who are in the room, why are you guys still fighting over the language of that agreement on March 27th and whether or not you know the players are supposed to be paid on a prorated salary? Why didn't you make that more clear? And I've heard that from a lot of people on both sides because that still is an issue, and this is where we are. And so I think that there's every reason in the world for the two sides to try to work it out, even if they start and then it gets derailed by some positive tests. But as I've said all along to you guys, I think it's so fragile, and it's made more fragile like the events we've seen the last 48 hours in the negotiations over the financial terms.
Okay, Buster, tell me more about this this argument about the language of the agreement, because one of the things we keep hearing is...
Yep.
Look, the owners agreed to this. They came to an agreement. The players and them both, nobody put a gun to the owner's head, and they signed off on this, and now they want to change the deal. What do you mean they don't actually, they don't agree on what the deal actually was?
100%. Look, the owners have maintained that the leaders of their negotiation, even, and I remember this, when Tony Clark, Scott Boras came out and said, yeah, you know, the talks about what the salaries are going to be, those are over because we all agreed to it on March 27th. And that conversation on the player side started in early April. And even at that time, you know, folks I talked to on management side, their reaction privately, and they weren't going public at this time, was, what are they talking about? That's not right. That's not what we agreed to. 2 weeks ago, Joel Sherman of the New York Post wrote an article in which he cites an internal memo on management side saying, okay, we talked to their lawyer today, here's what our understanding is, and if the games continue without fans in the stands, then Rob and the union understand that there's going to have to be another negotiation. And as this thing has gotten louder and louder and louder, At no point have we seen the union come out and say, no, here's the written language, here's the actual agreement, here's what the language is, and here's how it's interpreted. You know, management says it has, language that it believes goes one way. The players say it has language that goes the other way. And what I've heard from people on both sides is, why are we in this position? Why was this not made explicitly clear on March 27th in that negotiation? Because we were all talking about the possibility of games being played without fans in the stands in mid-March, if you guys remember.
Buster Olney is our guest. All right, Buster, I know that some players have came out in support of what Blake Snell had to say. But again, I think there were plenty of fans, and reading some of the comments on Twitter and social media, that really didn't appreciate what he had to say. Maybe more because of how he said it and how he presented himself, like Jeff Spicoli, slightly, from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. But then when you have Max Scherzer, and I admit I'm a huge Max Scherzer fan, but he's one of eight players on the MLBPA's powerful executive subcommittee. When he tweets out what he did last night, after discussing the latest developments with the rest of the players, there's no need to engage with MLB in any further compensation reductions. Scherzer is that's when someone like that tweets out and talks about things, you need to sit up and listen. Did you have any reaction to what Max Scherzer tweeted out last night at about 10 o'clock?
Yeah. When you saw that, it reinforced what we know, is that the two sides are in their bunkers. I don't think there's any chance that the owners will go forward if there are not salary adjustments, some kind of salary rollbacks, because from their perspective, the money that they're going to lose, it's obvious they're not taking revenue. You don't have fans in the stands, and so they want changes. On the player side, and Max made reference to what we were just talking about, this past agreement, which management people are saying that wasn't the agreement. The union saying it was the agreement. If, in fact, that's their stance, then it's hard at this moment to see the middle ground that they're going to be able to find. Now, it's interesting. You know, Max is one of the most prominent clients of Scott Boras. And the other night when the owner's proposal came out, I was sent a memo that Scott sent to his clients, and it basically, what Max tweeted out was pretty much last night was what Scott wrote to them, saying, the owners are responsible for their current situation, because they've leveraged themselves when it comes to loans and in the way they acquired their franchises, and now they're looking for the players to bail them out. There should not be any salary givebacks. And so, as I mentioned, the other day when the owners offer came out, I heard from moderates, players, from agents who were very much open to the idea of negotiating, and their feeling was, oh boy, like this drove, that offer was so bad that it drives people closer to the way that Scott Boras views it, the way that Max Scherzer views it, and actually coalesces the players more than they have been in the past, with very few exceptions like Trevor Bauer.
Yeah. So what is behind Trevor Bauer's tweet that saying that telling Scott Boras to stay out of it? I mean, what? So you're saying there aren't many players that agree with that, and in what ways does Scott Boras's involvement or whatever complicate things?
Well, there's no doubt. And look, I'm not in the room, so I can't tell you what truth is, what's reality and what's not reality. But there absolutely is a perception on management side and on the player side among some agents that Scott Boras has high influence when it comes to decisions that Tony Clark makes. And there's also a perception that Bruce Meyer, who's the number two official in the union, he's their lead negotiator, is a strong ally of Scott Boras. And so a lot of the union stance is being influenced by Scott Boras. That's not just something that has you know, that perception has not been there for just the last 2 months. It's been there since Bruce Meyer went in about a year ago. And so there is, without a doubt, that feeling that Scott dictates a lot of what goes on. Now, so when Trevor tweeted that out last night, I was my first thought was, boy, you know, has he not been paying attention to recent months? This is not breaking news that some people feel like Scott has a lot of influence. But I'm sure that if you're on the owner's side, you're loving that. You're loving any discord on the union side where one player's complaining about an agent's involvement and suggesting there's some discord about what's going on between the two sides. You guys remember the player strike in 94 and 95. It was amazing how strongly the players held together. We didn't get a peep of discontent. You heard different things. Maybe Lenny Dykstra was upset. Maybe this other player was upset. But by and large, the players were so strong holding together. And so when Trevor Bauer tweeted that out last night, I bet you there were management officials texting each other saying, hey, did you see what Trevor Bauer just tweeted out? Because they're cheering him on, hoping that, you know, he can help to break the, in their eyes, the Scott Boras logjam.
So in this timeline, what's the next step? What's the next thing we're waiting for as baseball fans are hoping for any type of good news?
Well, the expectation today or tomorrow is that the players are going to forward a formal counteroffer to what the owners gave. And everyone's going to be looking for some possible middle ground on the financial side that the two sides can build from. You know, and there was, I think, reporting by Jeff Passan and others that the players' proposal is going to involve more games, not 82, but, you know, probably closer to 100 games given the timeline. But I don't know where you go in terms of a middle ground financially from where Max wrote last night, where there's no reason that we should be talking to the owners about money anymore because they have an agreement. And I think everyone is going to be looking to see if there's some wriggle room in that and some indication that they're willing to negotiate off that stance.
Buster, another element to this whole situation has been what baseball plans to do with the draft, and we've talked about that with you a little bit. That's coming up in not too long. Five rounds, and a lot of people are wondering what that means for the rest of all that talent out there, and a lot of great players that came in rounds well after that. What's the latest on where we stand with how the draft is or is not going to proceed?
Yeah, and I think I mentioned this to you guys before that I do think there's a high chance that there are going to be major league caliber players that we will never see. Paul Hembikides is a researcher at ESPN, and he sent me these great notes last week that in 2019 there was something over, there was like 1,050 players, U.S.-born, Canadian-born, in other words, draft-eligible, who appeared in at least one big league game, and nearly 50% of those were guys drafted after the fifth round. You know, that's how much we've seen from guys after the fifth round, like Jacob deGrom, who signed in the ninth round, Kevin Kiermaier, Matt Carpenter of the Cardinals, Matt Adams, who's had a long career. So many guys after the fifth round. Well, according to the, you know, the rules in place now, those players who drafted after the fifth round, their signing bonuses are capped at $20,000. So, you know, in the past, if you were a later round draft pick, you weren't a lead guy, you might get enough money that you felt like, okay, I can try to make that work for a few years. I can follow the dream. Now, especially, you've got to believe that there are players from families that are really hurting financially. That decision might be different. Jacob deGrom, I mentioned, was a ninth-round pick. I think in 2009, he got $95,000. And, you know, I talked to him about, you know, his family reaction after that and how he felt supported by family members who gave him the go-ahead, hey, go ahead and give it a shot and, you know, see if you can make that work. There are going to be major league caliber players who are going to say, no, I got to go work for my dad or I got to go, you know, do this job because my family needs the money. There's also a lot of concern among teams that there's going to be some graft. There are going to be some clubs that are going to, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod their way around that $20,000 cap, and there's going to be a lot of abuses. And I think one thing we definitely learned during the Houston Astros sign-stealing scandal is that Major League Baseball doesn't have a great ability to investigate and pursue these cases. And so I do wonder if in 3 or 4 years we're going to hear about, you know, examples where players got money under the table to try to circumvent those $20,000 signings. And look, there's also a perception that, you know, big market teams, Yankees, Dodgers, are going to have a huge advantage over some small market teams like the Marlins, who are apparently very financially strapped and might not be in a position to even consider $20,000 signing bonuses in the way the big market teams can.
Buster Olney has been our guest. Buster,
I know. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be Dr. Doom.
I'm trying to end with a positive note. How's your hair coming back out? Because I'm going through some hair issues right now. How made any progress there?
My hair is fully rehabilitated to the point that I'm actually looking at my clippers again. Going to cement that number 3 guard on there, I think. And I'm thinking about having to cut the hair again on the side. So it's made its way back. I made an appearance on our KBO Korean baseball broadcast yesterday. Going to make another one tomorrow. Got complimented by Boog Shambi, Eduardo Perez, for the way my hair is recovered.
So that's not going to scare you off from the Clippers. You're going to go right back in and go for more. I like that.
I'm 50-50 on the haircuts. The first one was pretty good. Second one was really bad. I made mistakes that I have learned from.
Well,
Steven, you're not jumping in saying, "Yeah, baby, way to go."
Hey,
I can hear the trepidation in your non-response.
No, I'm trying to. I'm just trying to. I want my goal is to grow hair to cut it, because haven't had hair in like 15 years now, and I haven't tried. I always just buzz it down, so it's growing out a little bit, and so I don't know. I'm in this weird no man's land, and so I only wish that I could talk about messing up cutting my hair to have hair.
Well, pray for me. Pray for me before the broadcast tomorrow, okay?
And it's not all doomsday. You're just, again, that's one of the reasons why we appreciate having you on the show. You're just honest with us, and you give us the information that you've heard and give us your true opinion, and that's all we can ask for, because, I mean, I think anyone can see that this baseball thing so far has just publicly been a train wreck.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It makes you shake your head, and you're kind of embarrassed for everybody involved that it's playing out this way, that this ugly conversation's happening at a time when there's so many other terrible things going on.
Nate Buchady, last word with Buster Olney.
Well, I have one last question for you, actually, Buster. I saw some people floating out the idea that one way for Major League Baseball to recoup a lot of this lost revenue is expansion. And if they can charge $1 billion per franchise, they haven't expanded in a long time. Are you hearing any whispers of that? Do you think that's a realistic possibility?
Not in the immediate future. I think it's something that they would consider if the sport recovers over the next 4 or 5 years. Because let's face it, the potential franchise value has not been lower than it is now in probably the last decade. The franchise value, for whether you're the Dodgers or you're the Yankees or the Royals or any team, and a new franchise, those numbers have certainly come down because of the hit that financial landscape has taken. But there will be a time when baseball owners will again use expansion to get some cash, but I just don't think it's in the immediate future.
Buster, as always, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it, sir.
Okay, guys, take care.
That's Mr. Buster Olney, our baseball insider. What do you? How do you feel after talking to Buster now? Oh, really?
Sober. Like, it's a sobering conversation with him. You know, like, you want to hope for a lot of things. I tell myself that a lot of this blustering back and forth is just what happens when people negotiate. You know, they take these strong stances. I'm not going to sign this, and, you know, you guys could take a hike, and then they finally come together. But when you listen to Buster, he's been pretty consistent all along about this, and I just feel like he kind of splashes some cold water in your face that wakes you up a little bit. I don't think he's being being doom and gloom. I think he's just being realistic.
Yeah, there's a level of pessimism there, but I think it's all warranted and all earned. You know, we hear people say, "Yeah, well, I expect it by July 4th." Well, why? Just because you think that they're just going to start making smart decisions? They're just all of a sudden going to just start doing the right thing? Just all of a sudden? I mean, I put a lot of weight in what Buster says and how he says it, and I think that we are far off from seeing baseball. Now, I think we'll see it eventually, because at a certain point in time, they're either going to scrap it or they're going to have to make a decision to do something to put some money in their pockets.
What must the new ownership group of the Kansas City Royals be thinking?
Unlucky. I mean, I don't think. I mean, I think they have to just unfortunate timing. But they didn't buy this to turn it over really quick.
Right.
I mean, this was a long
play.
You got
to think long term. That's
right. It's a long play.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back after this on WHB.